Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. It is Todd Bubba Horowitz, all refreshed and recharged from an unbelievable weekend, and oh man, I'll tell you, did we get Jackson Hole or what? You know, I don't know. To me, the biggest Ponzi scheme in the history of the world is at play, and I don't know that we'll ever get a straight answer. And I got to tell you something. To me, it pisses me off. You know, we are dependent on idiots that have to come out and give us different information at different times, and I don't get it. I gotta tell you, I don't understand. First of all, I don't want to hear from them in the first place. Second of all, I think that they're basically stealing our money with everything they do. And third of all, every dime, we continue to build deeper and deeper in debt. When does it stop? When do they say that the stock market is not the most important thing in the world? And maybe the citizens of this world and this country are important. I mean, when does it become a market where they actually understand what really needs to be done with this versus the same old bullshit that we continue to see day after day, week after week, year after year? I mean, you imagine that we're in this stupid program now 9 years, I guess, 8 years, whatever it is. I mean, are we not a society that can get out of this? When did we become some weak nation that has no balls to step up and do the right thing? Okay, that's what I don't understand, is when do we come back and do the right thing? Okay, now maybe I'm wrong. I am not an economist, but I certainly lend no credence or credit to any economist, because basically they are stubborn jackasses with their theory, and they try to make something work to their theory versus the other way around, having it work around their theory and making the adjustments to their theory. Now, you tell me, okay, if you believe that what they're doing has done any good for anybody. Because I don't. I think this has been almost, I mean, I can't call it criminal because obviously, well, I guess Hillary Clinton's getting away with a lot of stuff, so maybe it is criminal. I don't know. I just can't stand it anymore. But what I can't stand is the double talk that we get, the manipulated society that now comes out and we hear all this stuff, and maybe there's going to be a rate increase. What are they, testing a balloon to see if the market's going to collapse? To me, this is just another showing of how ignorant we become to how to really operate a business. And again, I've said this 1,000 times in this show. Make no mistake about it. The United States of America is a business. Okay. And if you don't start running it like a business, we are going to end up in the total crapper. Okay. Because where is it that we actually can see improvement? I keep seeing manufacturing numbers miss. Another wonderful GDP number showing how much our growth is going. Now, do you think that these assholes really think that we're going to go to 3.5% growth from 1%? And where is it going to come from? my idea is I'd like to know where it's going to come from. If you think it can get there, how are you going to get there? You know, if any of us took these plans to an employer, okay, and said, well, this is what I think we're going to do. And okay, well, okay, good. I'm glad you think you're going to do that. How do you plan on getting there to do that? Okay. Okay, so tell me. Explain to me how we're going to go from crappy jobs to no growth, to no expansion, to no capital spending, and all of a sudden we're going to get 3.5% growth. Where is that going to come from? Who the are they kidding? I mean, is this? There used to be a radio show I used to listen to in Chicago. Who are you crapping? I mean, who are you crapping? I mean, do you think that the American people are that stupid that we can't realize that you have no clue of what's going to happen next, and yet you continue to make these ridiculous statements? I mean, raise the rates already. Let's go. It's enough. It's enough of the garbage. It's enough of watching the country shrivel away. It's enough of the violence that all this is causing. You know, we can talk about violence all you want, but a big portion of it comes because people got no money. They can't eat. They can't enjoy themselves. They got nothing to spend. Okay. In the meantime, companies already sent them, spread themselves out and sold their futures for today. What's going to happen, okay, down the road here if we do not free up some overall liquidity for the average guy? Okay. Where are we going to go where this won't come to play and where we cannot get the actual growth in this country because you have stymied everything? Okay. You have stymied the entire system is locked because there is no liquidity. And for those of you who've listened to the show long enough, know that no matter what, the number one thing that we have to have is liquidity. With your trading, whether you're running an economy, whether you're running a business, you have to be able to be liquid so that when you need something, you can go for it. And we don't have that. We have right now probably one of the most illiquid systems in forever. And I got to tell you, it just is getting to me, the overall stupidity and stubbornness and listening to these guys over and over and over again. I'm telling you, it's the same as the government, okay, and Congress, that even though, you know, you see these major battles of Republicans and Democrats, you know, fighting each other tooth and nail, but when they're done and the TV cameras go down and the newspapers go away, they go back in the back room, they sit down, have a scotch, maybe they smoke a joint, and say, how do we screw the American people again? How do we get our money out of them, okay, by doing something but making it look like we're doing it for their own good? Because that's what it's all about. It's all about perception. As they say, perception is reality. And I don't know about you, but I'm sick of it. I'm sick of the whole rotten, stinking mess that has been created by the idiots at the Federal Reserve and the idiots in the government that could care less about you and me and only care about their personal well-being and how much money they can climb on and build their family wealth while we're having one of the worst economic times in history, okay, under the guise that everything is great and we're getting better. Okay, to me, I can't see much better of anything. Okay, now again, I could be just a one-off and not know what I'm talking about, but we'll see how it does play out. In the meantime, when you miss an episode, you got to go to libertytalk.fm, get the Bubba Show, as well as the Sporting Edge. In the meantime, starting a new class tomorrow on Tuesday, options, and on Wednesday, how to day trade futures. In the meantime, I'm going to step out here for a break. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horse. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horse.
Stay with me, man. Listen up.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd, Bubba Horowitz, and it's the Jane King Hour today. No, it's actually Jane making her regular visit here, and Jane King, Lila Max Media, the Ka-Ching Report, and of course, her motto is, Jane King, we bring good things to life, just like GE. What's up, Jane?
Yeah, you gave me that one. I appreciate the plug. Thank you.
Well, you know what? Listen, you do a great job, and, you know, that's you deserve it. You do bring good things to life, and the Ka-Ching Report is unbelievable and always fun to read. So, Jane, you know, this week, obviously, we had some very bad weather and bad stuff in Kokomo, Indiana, your hometown. And, you know, it reminded me, you know, I once had to make an emergency landing in a small plane in Kokomo, Indiana. And I just thought, you know, we talk about that a little bit. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, that airport's actually not very far away from. I always figure if I make it big enough in business, I'm going to just take a plane right into that airport because it's like 2 miles from my parents. But I have yet to do that, but someday. Kokomo, I got hit with tornadoes. You know, it's Tornado Alley. I mean, I remember growing up and doing the tornado drills all the time, and we never really had one when I lived there, but it's been hit a couple times in the past few years. My niece had her house destroyed there in 2013. She was pregnant at the time and actually would have been in the house if she wasn't pregnant. She left just to go somewhere else. I think she went to her mother-in-law's to rest during the bad weather. But, yeah, I woke up from a nap. I took a nap because I get up at 2 in the morning. And I saw on Facebook all these, you know, Facebook friends I have in Kokomo talking about the tornado, and I called my brother, and I saw the Starbucks was destroyed, a Starbucks I'd been to, like, 50 times probably, and I called my brother, and he said, you know, I was listening to the noon weather report, and nobody mentioned anything about severe weather or tornadoes. There was 3:20 a.m., 6 to 8 tornadoes come through Kokomo, and they just spontaneously happened. And apparently the manager of the Starbucks was good enough to get everybody into safety, and everybody survived, which is incredible, and amazing kudos to that manager. And I think, you know, we saw during these tornadoes, both in Kokomo and there were others in Ohio yesterday, that cell phones and emergency alerts on cell phones and smartphones is making such a difference with these things. So people, that's what my brother said. He found out that there was tornadoes because he saw it on his phone. He had an alert. And what a great thing that people have these mobile devices that can alert them of severe weather in the area. And I think that made a huge difference. And just so glad nobody was seriously injured. And I know it's, you know, it's cleanup time, but at least there was no, it was just property damage.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it was 1986. We got caught in a storm in a small plane and had to make an emergency landing in Kokomo, Indiana. So always sad. And of course, it's the sadness of us also going on in Louisiana with their flooding. And, you know, I found it interesting, and I don't know if you've heard the details on this, but, you know, Katrina, when that happened, a lot of that could have been avoided, but the Army Corps of Engineers and the government decided not to fix the levees, and they were told that they needed to be fixed, and they could have done. And of course, I was overhearing some news the other day that Louisiana wanted to do some stuff, and they got stopped again by the Army Corps of Engineers, and that would have relieved a lot of the damage that they just had here now. What do you think of all that?
Well, I think it's typical government bad decisions. I remember during Katrina and hearing that if they would have spent another, and this was like when this decision was made, if I recall, it was like 20 years before Katrina came, it would have been actually by today's dollars, not really, it didn't seem like that much money. It would have been an extra, whatever, $100 million. I don't remember the exact numbers. And I was like, you know what? But it would have protected them for 100 years or so. And I'm like, it's worth that. When you think of just, you know, all the devastation it caused. I mean, like, New Orleans still isn't back where it is. And it's been more than 10 years ago that Katrina hit. The oil industry, I mean, just the cost involved in a huge storm like that far outweigh the investment of protecting. And just the people and the lives. And so I think, you know, government doesn't spend money wisely. And I think that's another evidence that that happens.
Another example of ignorance at work. Refusing to, you know, well, they might miss out on a free meal. You know, they could miss a steak dinner at somewhere because they're fixing things that really need to be fixed. So
think about their like cost analysis. It's like, well, if we spend this much, it will protect us against a category 2. If we spend this much, a category 3 and 4 and 5. Well, let's just spend enough to protect against a category 2. It's like, come on, just spend the money and protect yourself. I mean, the chances are, over time, you're going to be getting a severe hurricane. So it was just poor judgment.
I mean, and I think that's a lot of the problem we see is poor judgment by everybody in the position of power. I mean, but for them to come up with a whole slew of new entitlement programs, that's never a problem. They just print out some more money, and I think that's where we get kind of lost in the whole financial picture. Is, you know, if we would live on a normal budget like everybody else has to live on, and live like we're supposed to, and take care of the business, you know, you're at home, you got a problem, you have to take care of the emergency. I mean, these things are emergencies and things that can be prevented by doing the proper mm-hmm. things in the first place versus just giving all the money away for nothing.
Well, and it's not just weather disasters. It's financial disasters. I mean, we really didn't have to have what happened in 2007 and 2008. But, you know, people just kept doing what they thought was right, didn't want to spend the money, didn't want to take action to prevent things. And we all know what happened. So there's just, government's horrible at preventing situations. They just let stuff go, and then there's a crisis, and then it ends up costing 20 times more than it would have.
Right. And I mean, again, it's sad that the government doesn't have to live by the same set of rules that you and me have to live by, and, you know, keeping a budget and doing things that are correct. And, you know, hey, in the meantime, the markets are now in a 33-day of not moving more than 1%, and, you know, totally in a coma. What, you know, do we eventually break out here, or is this it forever now?
Oh, well, talk about a challenge. I mean, so I talk about the markets every day on television, try to make this market interesting. I mean, I've been talking about Janet Yellen for 7 days. I mean, it's like, and everybody's like, come on, Jane, we have to talk about the Fed. I'm like, it's the only thing anybody's talking about. So we're just, you know, trying to talk about other things like Apple's warning about this and whatever's going on. But, I mean, I guess, you know, until we get some clarity from the Fed and maybe the election, I mean, there's always something to push it. I lunch with some Wall Street folks this week, and they're like, yeah, we're not doing anything until after the election. So there's another couple months of nothing to talk about.
And what's
thank goodness we have politics.
Let me ask you a question. What's your take on Mylan, on the EpiPen thing? What is your view of that whole thing?
Well, it's interesting because I feel like what really exposed the pricing increase had to do with Obamacare, because many more people are now having huge deductibles, and they're having to pay for this stuff out of pocket. Like before, they would just increase, and, you know, Medicaid would pay for it, or insurance companies would pay for it, or they'd negotiate with insurance companies, which is typically how it works, for a lower price. But now the people have to pay for it. I mean, we pay $1,200-$1,300 a month for medical and dental, and we have, like, it's almost a $5,000 deductible. I mean, I haven't used insurance for anything besides a few preventative things. And so I think now when you start paying for all this stuff out of pocket, you start to realize how expensive this stuff is. And so I think that that's one thing that's going to have to change. I mean, I guess, you know, in the near, it's good. There's a couple things interesting about this. First of all, is that this was started by a few parents on social media, which is fascinating, like the power of social media and how it brought all this to light. And it also brings to light, like, how all these deals were done in the past between companies and insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies and hospitals. And then it also tells us we're going to have to be smarter and negotiate. And hopefully there'll be a generic version comes out. This will give somebody, when there's money to be made, somebody will come out with a new generic version. And hopefully, you know, they can get this all settled and Mylan will be able to accommodate everybody. But I think that the healthcare system's in a huge overhaul, and I wish it happened faster.
Well, I mean, that's for sure. But I mean, I believe that, I mean, I said this and I said it on air. I just believe that, you know, hey, it's a free market. They can charge whatever they want. And there was competition, and the competition obviously couldn't make it. So as competition gets smaller, prices go higher. Now, I also said that I believe that, you know, Mylan, as cheap as the drug is, should donate to every school in America some of these things, because every school's got to have one, because you never know what kid's going to have this anaphylactic shock from, you know, a peanut allergy or something else, and that needs to be worried about. But overall, until they fix the healthcare system, you know, it's been a battle forever between, it started out, I don't know who started it, it's like who came first, the chicken or the egg, either the doctors or the insurance company started beating up on each other, but it's a battle back and forth of what you can get paid for something, and to me that's a bigger problem that needs to be addressed. What do you think?
Oh, it's ridiculous. I mean, I remember getting, the only time I've ever really been in the hospital for any more than like overnight was when I had my children, and like insurance paid for both of those because I was working full time at the time. But I look at the bill and I'm like, it's like $25,000 for like an uneventful birth with no pain medication, by the way.
Right. You're natural. You're a farm girl. You took it natural. This is...
I didn't mean to. It was with my daughter, and I guess that's a story for another show. But no, I was born in this century for a reason, and I would have taken pain medication if I could have, but we got there a little late. But that's another story. But anyway, I was just like, are you kidding me? And then they ended up paying like 12, and I was like, what did it charge 12 to begin with? The pricing is ridiculous.
That was the Jane King Hour, and this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, we're going to stop by here for a break. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba
Horowitz. Margie said, Roy, you ain't listening to me.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and put you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. It's time for the one, the only Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. And Matt, what's up, my man?
Not a lot. How you doing, Todd?
I'm doing good. A little frustrated. It looked like there was going to finally be a little bit of movement, and there was a lot of movement, but not in any of the places that I was hoping for.
Right.
You know, but I don't know, what did you take away from the price action last week? What was your view of all that?
I think that could have been, I think what we that action we saw on Friday could have been the beginning of a breakdown. And I'm leaning bearish. I have been for a while. So maybe I'm just seeing things that I want to see, but I think that there's a good chance that could be the top. I think that the top, we saw the top in the NASDAQ. So I think the NASDAQ, at least, I think, you know, has reached its target and it's ready to fall. S&P, you know, we've been talking about 2200 to 2210, and, you know, we got the 2193 at the peak so far. So, it was within margin of error, so that definitely could be it. It doesn't really affect our positioning. We're going to stay short. But, I think there's a decent chance that was the top. Although, like I said, the 2200 to 2210 would be a little bit clearer for us.
Did it surprise you that the way that the markets came back on Friday afternoon, and moreover, did it surprise you that the NDX and the NASDAQ actually got into plus territory before the day was over?
Yeah, it did. We have a very short-term pattern that broke, and then the bounce back up brought us to the underside of that short-term pattern. I didn't see it get back in. It didn't get back in. It right into the... the close, it got to the underside of it and then seemed to back off a little bit. So, you know, it's still hard to say. But it didn't surprise me that much. But if we don't see follow through, it'll be a little more surprising and it'll cause problems.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, it's very interesting at how the markets are acting, and every time they look like they could give it up, they find new money and new buyers to come in and hold it back up again. Now, you know, I know we've talked about this the last couple of weeks that the ratio is about 80-20, not so smart money to smart money. And I know that ratio is being maintained. I mean, how much does this not so smart money can, how much can they continue to push here? I mean, it's really getting quite, I think ridiculous overall when you look at, and I'm not a fundamental guy as you're not either, but yeah. I mean, the underlying fundamentals suck. And yet we continue to find buyers every single time they dip them, they have buyers bringing them right back again.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe, I think probably what's keeping the market up here, and this is not something that we talk about volume. I'm not into, following volume very much, but, we're here in the last week of August. The volume's fairly light. I think we'll find out, either probably not this week. It might happen this week though. But, I think, after everybody comes back from vacation, next week, after Labor Day, then I think we could start seeing, if we're talking about algorithms and computers running this market, which is what I think we're seeing, then I think that's what allows it to stay up here. But I think, from what I've, been checking out, I think there have been outflows from most mutual funds and, so cash is very low and light and, you have outflows. So, you would think that this, the conditions are right for a sell-off, and as far as sentiment, what we're talking about with the dumb money, smart money, they're very complacent. So it's just everything lines up for a sell-off. Whether now we're just trying to debate, really where I think the top's going to be. Not really. The real question is, have we seen it, or are we going to get one more, small push higher?
I thought we saw it 100 points ago, so I guess, yeah. Obviously I've been incorrect, but obviously it's been a very torturous move to the upside here. But I would have thought, again, I go back to Friday just for a minute, and you mentioned volume. I'd have thought when they had them on the ropes a little bit, after they made the big rally, early, and then they rolled over. And I would have thought that, you would have created some people that would have puked out, once they started to turn, because, nobody, when markets are uncertain, nobody really wants to go home long into the weekend. We see typically our biggest down moves on Mondays, because it's, people get that pent up selling energy because they get nervous. And before you know it, they're pushing them. But again, we didn't see that. So is this like just a little bit of a top building are you seeing here? Is that what your thought process is?
Yeah, that's what I think it is. I mean, I think, greater than 50% chance, it's just we've already seen the top, and that, we can just chop around here for a little bit before selling off. But, there's still that outstanding target up at 2,200, 2,010. But like I said, we came close enough. So I think that could be it. The other thing, too, is, if this is something I feel fairly strongly about, I was a very good pattern. I've been just kind of not totally switching subjects, but if you look at emerging markets, I think they've topped fairly. I'm almost certain about that. I don't want to, give 100% certainty with anything, but emerging markets look like they're done to the upside. So, they're a pretty good measure of, the risk on trade. Emerging market debt, I feel very strongly about, has topped. And that would have been on August 18th that it topped. Now, I'm looking at the ETF EMB for emerging market bonds. It peaked at about 118. It's at just above 117 right now. And I think that we're going to see a pretty big sell-off there. That doesn't speak very well to, a lot of risk-taking. So, that one is almost, I'm not going to say a slam dunk short sell, but.
Well, I mean, it's a slam dunk as far as the way you see it. I mean, it doesn't have to happen, but that's why you use defensive stops when you're wrong. I mean, you did call the top of the treasuries, I don't know, about 5 or 6 weeks ago, and they mixed around, but basically they are breaking down now. So, I mean, that was, you know, right on top of it. I mean, I believe it was about 6 weeks ago or whatever it was. You said we were at the top, and we are now working our way down. And, you know, I mean, if you did it through the TLT, I mean, it was about 142, 143, and we're down to 138. So certainly that was, you know, a good call. And, again, one problem in markets, we don't necessarily get instant gratification just because we see it that way, right?
Absolutely, yeah. That was one of those cases where you're up at the top, you think you're peaking, but you can't be sure until you get some distance from it. Now we have the distance from it, so you know, I think that will probably be the top. I have another pattern in the extreme case. What I'm looking at is it's possible TLT, being that it's 20 years plus, and I'm thinking more 10 year. The 10 year has peaked. I'm thinking it's possible TLT can make some new highs, but they would only be temporary, and they'd be probably a reaction to, you know, the equity sell-off we see coming. How that really happens with I don't think the 10-year interest rate can go any lower, but you can look at the 10-year interest rate over time and see that, you know, when it bottomed in 2012, you can see where TLT peaked that corresponds with that. And then you can look at, you know, the TLT has made higher highs since then, even before we made a new low this year in the 10-year rate, if that makes any sense. So, like, TLT might be able to make a little bit higher highs even if the 10-year rate doesn't make lower lows. But I just want to be, you know, specific about it.
I look at the 10-year, okay, and the 10-year future, you gave a short at about 134. Okay, we're now 131.20. Okay, yeah. And the break, to me, it looked like now you've been right all along, but I think a good confirmation came on Friday as we broke below and actually took out what looked like might have been some support down there. Is that true on your chart as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm looking at the 10-year Treasury futures chart, and where we ended on Friday is a support for me. Now, if we break that, then I'll be pretty sure that, you know, it's just, you know, going to be a further breakdown from there. What I would do, if I'm just happy to be short, you know, TLT, happy to be short. We're actually using 10-year Treasury futures, what we're shorting.
Right.
But if one wanted to put on a trade that, you know, had low risk, I would actually buy TLT and short emerging market bonds, the EMB.
Oh, a little Paris trade from Paris trade from Matt Demeter of DemeterResearch.com, and Matt's been pretty much on top of it. And again, he like everybody else, we go through these torturous cycles where it's not that winning or losing; it's that it's so tough to trade sometimes, and they just don't move. And that's usually the case in markets that have no volatility. But this is Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com, and this is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to step out here for a break, but remember, when you miss an episode, you go to libertytalk.fm and you can download the Bubba Show every day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. We're going to step out here for a break and come back with more from Matt after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, will be right back. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with our guy, Matt Demeter. And Matt, you know, we've talked about this pretty much week over week, and you've been, you know, kind of looking for gold to make a pullback, and it looks like it's pulling down back to some potential support. And I don't know what we'll do from there, if we'll get a pop off of it, but I know that in your views, you believe that gold is going much lower one more time, and you have your gold special. Tell us about the special again, and let's talk about gold for a minute.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like you said, we don't think the gold bottom is in. We think that where we bottomed in December and January was not the bottom we were looking for. We have a target support line that is below there, which we have not hit. And so what we're doing is we're going to send out when we hit that line, when we hit the bottom we're looking for, we're going to send out an email and a text to subscribers to sign up for what we call the gold bottom call. And you know, we don't want to, it's free to sign up, and we don't want to charge for it if we're wrong. So once we hit our target, like I said, we'll send out the email and the text, and if we're off by 3% of our target, and we have to get at least a 20% rally from there as well. If those two things don't happen, we don't charge anything. Otherwise, if we're right, then you know everybody makes money, then we'll charge $49.
And you can't beat a deal like that. And of course, you can't beat a deal like volatility futures continue to get bought up by the big commercials. And obviously, they have a little bit more money than most, so they can afford to hold a little bit longer. But it does kind of feel like volatility is kind of stalled down here, and it looks like it could be on the road to making a big move, which is what they're looking for. What do you see?
Yeah, I mean, they have a huge position on, as of the last COT report. They're roughly 125,000 contracts. And when we look back to last year in May, when we peaked in the S&P, and then we fell for about 12%. From there, that was they were up to about 102,000 contracts, and we're the current position is 20,000 contracts more. So they're definitely betting for higher volatility. We've been talking about this for weeks and weeks, and I think we're at some point. At some point, we have to get a sell-off. Otherwise, they're just going to get this position's going to bury them. It's a big position, and they're losing money on it every day that we don't get a volatility spike. So, when it does happen, I think, when we do get a sell-off, I don't think it's going to be a mild one either. I think it's going to be a volatile one.
Oh, no, I agree. I think, I've seen this pattern about 5 or 6 times, maybe 7 times in the last 10 years, where you get highs in the market and volatility continues to collapse. And usually within a few weeks after that, we get a very big, nasty sell-off, which obviously spikes volatility. And I think we're probably looking at that here. Again, who can call it when? If we could call it when, we would just, we'd sit on the beach and we'd call it in. But obviously, it's always in the back of our minds. And it's kind of like, Matt, the grain markets. The grain markets, all of a sudden, they just gave up the ghost and just really collapsed last week. And I don't know what you're seeing there, but give us your feel of what you're seeing in the grain markets now.
Well, grain markets, some of the grains, wheat is a tough one because wheat, I would have been happy with it having bottomed. I don't think it's – I use different charts. I use both futures and I use sort of the spot chart, which isn't really spot. It's just an index kind of spot chart from Goldman Sachs. But that one hasn't broken down from its support yet, the spot one. The futures, I'm having a hard time trying to figure out how it can, sort of stay in here. I have more error in that chart just because of the roll effects. But I do see lower lows for soybeans and possibly corn. Overall, I don't think the grains have fully bottomed yet as a group. I could say the same thing pretty much across the board for agriculture and, commodities as an even bigger group. I don't think we're that at this point, though. I don't think we're that far off, the bottoms. I think that, for example, in meat, we're looking for maybe 10% more downside, and that's it. And then I think you're looking at a pretty big bounce there. It's pretty much the same across the board when I look at agricultural commodities. I think as a group, we're looking for another 10% lower, approximately.
That's pretty big stuff, considering that they're already down, quite a bit. But I mean, I kind of see those markets as a blow off to the downside, especially in wheat. I thought that looked like it was the final puke. Now again, obviously, it doesn't mean it has to be, but it reminded me of the hog trade that, it puked and all of a sudden that's turned around and now has become, from the weakest garbage, has become now the strongest of the meats. And, we'll see. I mean, soybeans continue to hang in there and still look the best out of the bunch, but I still think that 950 is in play, or 940, November. And you believe that, obviously, you believe we're maybe back to 9 based on your 10%. So, and I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, But I think it also has to do with the dollar, right? I mean, you know, the dollar started to move up a little bit. And, you know, now are you still looking for a lower dollar first, or are you looking for it to go back to the buck now? What's your view?
Well, we have really strong support at 93, which we didn't quite get to. I was hoping we would. There were some lesser supports that it's bounced from. Same thing with the euro. It's had lesser resistance lines that it couldn't get through, pulled back down. Right now, I'm not excited about any currency trade. I do, but the broader picture is, yes, I do think that we could rally to new highs either from here in the dollar or from either the 93 level or even down to the 90 level. But I don't think, you know, big picture, that the dollar has completed to the upside. So I mean, that fits with our gold call, fits with overall commodities dropping. So yeah, we, as far as the dollar goes, we think we would have preferred a little bit lower, if I'm getting at, but we do see it going up over 100, you know, before its bull market's finished.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I mean, I've said that, you know, for quite a while, that I thought that was the case. And at some point, especially if the rhetoric we're getting from the Federal Reserve is accurate, which you never know with them guys, what the hell's going on. But what are you seeing here in the oil markets? They've been pretty weak now. You know, all of a sudden they go from, which we said, you were short oil. I mean, so you certainly called it last week. And, you know, I think we turn around here and work our way back down to probably the 40 area. What do you see?
Same exact as what you think. I think we're going to see 40. We have a rising target that's right now about low 39 level, but it's rising. It rises 10 cents each day. So, you know, by the time we get down to it, we'll probably be in the low 40s. So, yeah, we're looking for the low 40s in oil. And if you look at the COT report, the commercials, they really added to their short position in this last report. So when we got up to the high 40s and just under 50, they, you know, really layered on a lot of shorts. So they're seeing the same thing, I assume. And the same thing, interesting, going back to gold for a second, we had over the reporting week, we had a small dip in gold, maybe $5, something like that, $10. And, you know, typically into weakness, commercials will cover because they'll take profits. Instead, in gold, they actually added to their short position. And the way they're acting in both metals, we have to see new lows in the metals for them to get out of there, to extract themselves from massive short positions. So I expect, you know, that adds to our argument that, you know, our technical argument that we haven't seen the bottoms there either.
Well, they must be reading the Demeter report because, you know, they signed up for your gold call because, you know, they're bearing it away, and you've been on this well before they were on it. So I think that's pretty cool. And, you know, I think, I don't know, does the jobs number play into any of your feel this week or any of your views? I know you don't use those things, but does it mean anything?
I've been thinking, but this is off, you know, just the technicals. But I have been thinking that that the Fed would raise rates in September, at the September meeting. So if we do get a good jobs, I mean, I think if we have a decent jobs report or anything better than that, then I think they'll raise. So I think that'll be positive, obviously, for the dollar.
Well, that'll make the dollar go flying. But this was, and that's Matt Demeter, DemeterResearch.com. Matt, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Good to be here. Thanks, Todd.
This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you go to LibertyTalk.fm and download the show every day. We'll see you here back here tomorrow, same time, same station. The Bubba Show. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much. Turn the noise down. Let
this old world. Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.